thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
Yeah, it's the Urban Sports Scene. We're back. Live, waiting on my homeboy Will T, but hopefully he'll come in shortly. But yes, the Urban Sports Scene. Always a pleasure to have you all here. Listen to us live in effect. It's interesting. We took a break for a little bit. But now we're back. 2 weeks. I went to Miami. The time was nice. The weather was beautiful. Girls were beautiful. Went to KOD, which, if you don't know, that's a strip club, King of Diamonds. Very entertaining strip club. So it's a big strip club compared to other strip clubs in the United States. I've been to Magic City. Wasn't very impressed. So King of Diamonds is. Oh yeah, my man Will T is now in the building. Yeah, talking about I went to Miami 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
Yeah. And just talking about the King of Diamonds, just how KOD is, how big it is compared to like Magic City. Went with Angie, matter of fact, for a little bit. It was like just a retreat. And I just need to break, you know, in everything in life. You know, things were going down, so.
But you just said Magic City. It wasn't good for you.
Yeah, it wasn't good for me.
Okay, but.
Hold on. You weren't on. Now you're on. So apologize.
Okay. No, I want to refute that statement. It wasn't good for you when you went. But me and an associate, we went.
You could say his name. We were talking about it the other day.
Well, I'm not going. I'm not going to put his name out there. You know, we happened to make a trip there before, you know, to scout it out before you went.
Now you're really hyping it now.
I'm not hyping it. I'm telling the truth. Mm. We had an excellent time. It was just us two in there. We holding it down, you know, a lot of women, beautiful women, you know, they were showing me and that guy some love, you know. Then I brought you and some other individuals. And
all that was gone. Now,
I don't know why.
What are you trying to say?
I don't know why. Maybe they just enjoyed the company of me and my associate opposed to a group setting.
Maybe. That could have happened. I doubt it. We got there, it was kind of early too. When y'all went there, it was like what, the app, like 1 o'clock or
something? We went there as soon as it opened.
It wasn't like, but that was like one, right?
If I recall correctly, it was mid-afternoon. Yeah. It wasn't too late into the evening. It was definitely mid-afternoon. You know, they showed me and my guy some love. So, you know, I rebuke your statement.
I rebuke you, Satan. I rebuke your statements. Nah, I, like I said, KOD is bigger, though. Have you been to KOD?
No, I haven't been to KOD.
I gotta go. It's bigger. I mean, we were there with a group of folks, so it was like a bunch of us.
Angie went, too?
Yeah, she went.
Oh, that's what's up.
She went. At least she enjoyed herself. I don't know. But I enjoyed myself thoroughly.
Wet Willie's?
Yeah, went there. Okay. You know, I love them little frozen drinks. Wet Willie's, I went to... Fat Tuesdays up there too.
Go to any clubs down there?
I didn't get a chance. So I wanted to though. I didn't get a chance to. Did the beach. You know, I can't even swim, but I was actually in the water this time. So
that's what I don't do the ocean.
Me
I
either.
Can swim. I don't do the ocean.
So
if I can't see in the water, I don't do the water. Mm-hmm. But it's good. I'm glad you got a chance to, you know, get out of town and
I just need to
enjoy yourself and relax. That's what's up, man.
Yeah, I got to relax. So I'm refreshed. I see things clearer now. I know phony people from the real people, so I see a lot of things. Driving things. So, you know, I feel like I was telling my friend Harold, I was telling him that I feel like Malcolm X when he returned from Mecca. I just feel smarter. I see things so much clearer than I never did before. So
I feel you.
You know what I mean? So anyway, always RIP Big Ron, loyal supporter of the show. You heard the last show, you know. We're going to dedicate the rest of our shows to Ron, especially with the NBA segment. So RIP Big Ron. Also, you can also listen to our show you can also listen to our homies Voice of the Fan podcast show at www.blogtalkradio.com/thevoiceofthefan. The show is hosted by Alex and Jeff. Our phone lines are open. The number is 202-495-0904. That's 202-495-0904. And also, if you want to donate some funds to Ron, his family and whatnot, check out the site GoFundMe. The link is www.gofundme.com/CBT730. That's CBT730.
All right, let's get into our tradition of pregame.
All right, the Nationals have been playing pretty good ball. I think they won yesterday, and they actually had an impressive road trip against the Seattle Mariners when they beat King Felix and a couple of the other good pitchers on that team. Right now, they're 7 games up. I'm on Atlanta Braves. Should Nats fans now relax and say, okay, they got this. They got the NL East. You know, now we always hear about the Braves coming from the backside. No, coming from behind.
Coming from behind.
That only sound right.
It doesn't. It really doesn't. All right.
The Nets have to worry about the Braves. Whatever.
Yeah, absolutely, because you have to remember the Nets still have 6 games against the Braves. So, in theory, if they lose every game to the Braves, they're still – that would, you know, it would close in the gap to the Nets clinching the NL East. So, I think just realistically, you want to be at least minimum 9 games up on the Braves.
So, the Braves have that kind of – I mean, that kind of ownership over the Nets.
I'm not going to say ownership. I'm going to say that – in baseball today, nothing is guaranteed. Specifically, you know, we know how the Nets had their early season struggles. They seem to turn it around offensively now, especially ever since August. They lead the majors in home runs. But, you know, just because you haven't been getting consistent pitching from all of your starters, you want to be very comfortable. So I would say I am a Nets fan. I wouldn't be comfortable. I'm not comfortable.
I'm a Yankees fan.
I'm a Nets and Yankees fan.
How are the Yankees doing?
Hey, listen, 8.5 back. Yeah. We can still make a run for the second wild card.
I understand that.
Sorry, excuse me.
Go ahead.
So we aren't out just yet. But no, just switching back to the Nets. Mm-hmm. I would say for me, a 9 game lead would make me comfortable because I still think you have 3 in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And we know how, just being realistic, over the past 2 seasons, the Braves have owned the Nets at Atlanta.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe the Nets could reverse their fortune and get 2 out of 1 in Atlanta. But realistically, you just have to prepare yourself for maybe an 0-3 stretch when you go to Atlanta. And that would reduce your – even if they did, you know, with a 9-game lead, that would reduce it to 6 games. And I feel comfortable with that.
See, even with the play of, like, you know, Bryce Harper not coming around, and – so the Nets are playing better ball. You still think you still have that image that the Nets can kind of falter against the Braves. They play them in like a 3-game series. Regardless of where they play at. You're saying just in Atlanta though, but regardless of where they play at, fans should be scared.
No, scared never entered my mouth. Don't put words in my
mouth.
No,
I'm just asking. Sounds like it because you sound like
it's not. Because
they have an 8-game lead in the loss column. Basically, I count losses. I don't count that 7 crap in the loss side. Of their record, they're behind them 8 games.
Okay.
So that's a lot of games. I personally count you like 6 games left against the Braves.
Right.
Honestly, they shouldn't lose all 6 games to the Braves.
They shouldn't lose all 6.
That would be ridiculous. All 6 games to the Braves would be ridiculous.
Realistically, the Nets should break even at 3-3 or 4-2.
Yeah. If they lose the series, they should lose at least 2 to 4.
Right.
And that's still a good lead, a sizable lead. So I'm with you. I believe the Nets should hold on to it. I don't think fans should be worried. But I do think fans should be worried about this. I guess it's a good thing in a way. When Ryan Zimmerman gets back, I mean, Cabrera's played good at second base. You got Rendon playing at third. You know, he's one of the best Nats offensive players and defensive players anyway. When he gets back, you're going to have to make room for Zimmerman because his bat's important to the lineup.
It is.
But you got Cabrera playing at a decent level. At a high level defensively and playing well offensively, to be totally honest with you. Now you have it's like a problem. You're gonna have to put Zimmerman in that lineup because who he is. How do you work that out? How do they work that out?
Towards the stretch run, guys need days off. So you adjust your lineup as needed, depending on the pitching. Why are you going against right handed or left handed pitching? Like tonight, I believe
they're going Kershaw.
Yeah, they're going against Kershaw, so that means that LaRoche, because of his back flared up last night, so he's out of the lineup. And also Denard Span, who's probably been your MVP, he's out of the lineup tonight.
Because he's playing against Kershaw, left-handed pitcher. Yeah,
a great left-handed pitcher
in baseball.
Yeah, no doubt about that. But you know, you adjust your lineup as you see fit. But just realistic. To me, I would make Ryan Zimmerman the highest paid pinch hitter in baseball right now, just because defensively the way you're playing, I wouldn't try to jeopardize that just for the sake of making him happy, especially with the way they're producing from a defensive and an offensive standpoint.
This is how I look at the Ryan Zimmerman problem, or situation, not a problem, the situation. If Zimmerman, if the Nats are struggling offensively before he gets there, put him in the lineup. If they're playing great baseball, still winning games on a hot streak, no need to mess with it. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. That's the most important thing. I know Zimmerman's important. He's a good hitter. I think he's one of the better Nats hitters anytime I see him in the lineup. But at the end of the day, if this team is winning games, they're reeling off 5, 6, 7 games in a row, playing great defense.
They had a 10-game win streak.
Yeah, exactly. Playing great defense and playing well offensively, then there's no need to put him in the lineup. Because if he struggles, then you're putting pressure on Ryan Zimmerman to produce at a high level, especially coming right off of an injury. So I'm on the side of, depending on where they're at, when he is healthy, will depend on if he should play or not.
Touche.
All right, down to pregame. What are you going to say? Say your little thing real quick. Your Baltimore Stadium or I and whatever.
Going up 295.
There you go. Up 295. Manny Machado is out for the season. He hurt the same knee. But the O's are still moving along, winning. Well, actually, still went. They just won, beat the Twins. Ooh, it's thunderstorm. Just beat the Twins in a series 3 out of 4. Took 3 out of 4 from the Twins. So you know they're still holding it together. I was scared for a little bit, like, all right, we lost Manny Machado, we may go on a losing streak, but they're still playing good baseball. How, in your opinion, will this impact? I mean, this loss of Manny Machado impact the O's?
Well, whenever you get a guy who defensively is as good as Machado is and also offensively as good as he is, it's going to affect you somewhat. But because this Orioles lineup 1 through 9 is very impressive at the box, it's going to affect him a little bit, but not a whole lot. Machado, from a defensive perspective, because, you know, we've seen the plays that Machado is made at third base with his arm, especially, you know, getting guys out at first and also starting up the double play. So I don't see a lot of change, but defensively, more than offensively, it'll hurt this team down the stretch run.
I think it will hurt the team, to me, in the postseason rather than the stretch run. I think the lead is big enough. This team is a grinding team. They do a lot of good things offensively anyway with hitting home runs. Your Adam Jones played a high level. Nick Markakis, who is a steady player, the leadoff position. And so, to me, the Orioles will be in a decent position. And to be honest with you, the AL East is down. The Yankees don't have the pitching. Toronto's fading. The Rays, when they traded the Price away, so it makes them even beatable. So they have games where they play in a division where they can, in my opinion, still hold float, even with Manny Machado out of the lineup. Stated also, I want to know, also, the Orioles had an opportunity to pick up maybe a major, some type of third baseman. They decided not to. They got a couple utility players. They got Kelly Johnson, who can play who can play all parts of the field. They have an individual, I forgot his name, who can play third base, but he's not a starter. So I was thinking maybe they could try to replace Machado with one of these individuals. But no, I think the best situation for the Orioles anyway at the moment is have Chris Davis the third, which they are doing, and have Pierce play at first. But Pierce is hurt at the moment. So if they can get it, you know, if they hold float in and get Pierce healthy and have Chris Davis play third, that would be their best lineup. Again, you can never replace Manny Machado. He's too valuable.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. That's 2 times in a row I'm agreeing with you.
I know.
You're
doing a lot of agreement. I am a smart baseball fan. I won't lie. I'm going to call myself an expert, but I'm a smart fan.
You're knowledgeable.
Yeah,
you're
very knowledgeable. For an African-American individual, I'm very knowledgeable of the sport.
Yeah.
I'm proud of myself. I'm proud of myself.
Nigerian African-American.
Yeah, right. Nigerian-American.
Nigerian-American.
Yeah, Nigerian-American. That's the best way to use it. That's actually, I made a whole new when you fill out an application.
Mm-hmm.
I put other and I make that new one up. Nigerian American. I do it all the time.
Hey,
my brother thinks I'm kind of dumb for doing it. I don't. Ignorant.
Nah,
I don't think so. I think I'm pretty.
You're taking pride in your heritage.
Exactly.
There's nothing wrong with that.
All right, let's go to college football. I actually missed a lot of games, but I'm gonna lean on you. And hopefully, you watch something.
I watched a little bit.
All right,
gonna say a lot.
Okay, that's a little bit's cool.
Okay, from what I saw,
yeah.
Florida State struggled, but that's to be expected when just because of how, you know, with the 4-team playoff, teams have to start their out of conference schedule a little bit tougher. So this first week for teams, a lot of them, the level of competition they faced this week towards in prior seasons isn't, you know, it's increased. Florida State struggled. Georgia looked good, specifically Todd Gurley.
Yeah, her girl like a monster.
Yeah, and we saw that Kevin Sumlin is the engine that runs
that's what
Texas A&M. Okay,
that's what
it's not Johnny Football.
That's what I want to talk about. See, he did that same thing in Houston. Like in Houston.
Absolutely.
So it's like Johnny Football is talented to a certain extent. He's mobile. But don't get it twisted. Like, you all made fun of Call, but Call put up numbers like that in Houston. But he wasn't, like, as hyped as Johnny Football. You see the numbers this young man put?
Mm-hmm.
It just shows you that system is something else.
It's like Kevin Hill.
Just as similar to what Mike Leake did in Texas Tech. But people mm-hmm. trash his quarterbacks and just saying it was a system. Eventually, that's going to happen. Eventually, Sermon's going to get that respect enough to a point that his quarterbacks will be acknowledged as system quarterbacks.
Absolutely. Kevin Sumlin, he's going to be one of those guys that's going to be the next hot college football prospect to jump to the league, because we see what the league is doing, what the NFL is doing with spread offenses.
Mm-hmm.
He just further cemented that, you know, Johnny Football isn't Texas A&M football. He's Texas A&M football, and the things he does offensively. I'm not going to say he's able to do it with any quarterback, but if you look at his track record, if you look back at Houston and then look at now at Texas A&M, you see there's something consistent. It's him. It's his offensive philosophy and the way he coaches that team on the offense. Defense is a whole nother question. Yeah. But, Texas A&M looks like they're going to be a player this year. I was a little disappointed in UCLA. I know that they came all the way across the country and, you know, they played Virginia. And Virginia, don't get me wrong, over the past couple of years, that football program has definitely been improving. But, you know, I was expecting great things from UCLA, for me personally, with Brett Huntley and then the young man they have on defense. I forgot his name. That offensive line looked terrible. Looked very patchwork.
I expected Huntley to dominate that game. I actually had him as probably my top quarterback in the draft. Well, second to Jameis. But I was very disappointed in the outcome of that team. But it doesn't mean anything. It's the first game, so hopefully, you know. They play Virginia, though. You're supposed to dominate Virginia.
Well, Virginia's been an improving football program over the past 2-3 years.
Yeah, they weren't that good. I mean, last year, they were okay.
Yeah, they were okay. You could definitely see the progression. They were pretty good last year. You could definitely see the progression.
They won a bowl team last year, if my memory serves me correctly.
They were.
They were a bowl team?
I think so, yeah.
You sure?
I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm.
Maybe, okay, maybe I'm wrong. I swore they weren't. All right, could be wrong. Not gonna say it.
Hey, everyone's wrong occasionally.
I'm not 110%. Won't even say that.
Not Mr. 85%.
Yeah, Mr. 85% is supposed to be on the show eventually.
Oh, okay.
We played tennis yesterday, and he was like, if he was gonna be on the show, it'll be too late. So
okay,
85%. You listening? You know who you are. You're welcome anytime, man. Stop through. It doesn't matter. Anyway, it's about time for before commercial break, let's talk about my Michigan Wolverines. My Michigan squad look good. I know we play Appalachian State, but we look good.
Yeah, you erased that demon when Appalachian State.
They look good, though. They look good dominating that team. And Funchess is rocking number one. He's rocking all great Michigan wide receivers rocking number one. He's a tight end rocking number one.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's going to be real.
Yeah.
It's going to be a real season. Anyway, it's time for another commercial. It's time for a commercial break. When we get back, we'll be talking about my Redskins, roster cuts, first game of the season, playing against the Houston Texans.
Potential move. Yeah, you didn't hear.
Let's talk about that, too. We'll talk about the potential move. And also, it's the beginning of the Jay Gruden, RG3 era. It's the Urban Sports Lane.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Blow up last season. Every win. Every loss. Every headline. Blow it all up. 'Cause all that matters is what you do next.
For what? DJ. Turn it up. Smoking loud on a yacht, Louis V, everything to my motherfucking socks. Yeah, oh. And I'm living at the top, and no ice in my drink.
Hey, man. Got it right? Yeah.
Dang, no, I forgot I had curse. My
it's
bad.
It's natural. Dang. We all curse.
I am so mad.
Listen, we are not regulated by the FCC.
I apologize. I got to make sure everybody can listen to it. I forget. Put on my own. Dang. I love the song, though. The song's a great song, though.
Absolutely, it is.
It's a great song. I'm not going to beep any of that up, so beep that out. But I will make sure it's for the adults when I put it on iTunes.
Hey, just no problem show. At all. We got a couple reads before we start talking about Washington's football team. You can listen to our show by visiting our official Urban Sports Scene website at www.waleo.podbeam.com. Waleo is spelled W-A-L-E-O. We're also on iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook. Just search Urban Sports Scene. If you have any questions or comments, just email us at change.da.game6@gmail.com. You can listen to us on the Sports Crib podcast show on Thursday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just visit www.blogtalkradio.com/WC Stiller Fan. The show is produced by West Coast Stiller Fan. Our phone lines are open. Feel free to give us a call at 202-495-0904. That's 202-495-0904. And also, if you're able, please feel free to contribute to Ron Mega, our friend. Wally has done a great thing and started a GoFund campaign for him and his kids. He has one daughter and one unborn daughter as of yet. That site is www.gofundme.com/CBT730.
Thank you, Will T. Appreciate that, my man.
No problem.
All right, so let's get into it. Roster moves. Let's get into roster moves first. Well, actually, let's go to what you alluded to. The Redskins potentially could be coming back to D.C. or Northern Virginia. Be
or Maryland.
FedEx, or Maryland. Moving yeah. FedEx. I'm moving from FedEx to another stadium. But it's going to probably be a while from now, but still.
It's not going to be a while from now.
How long do you think it'll be? I mean, get all that fixed? I mean, to get a new stadium.
Let me tell you. Listen, if Daniel Snyder came out in the interview and already said that he's already started listening to proposals for the from architectural firms, or he's been engaging architectural firms to make renderings of a new stadium, realistic timeline, 5 years.
What's long enough for me? 5 years? I'm not saying I mean, well, like no. 10 years. I'm saying 5 years is still long.
Well, no, the way he's selling it to everyone or people are saying it, well, they have a lease up into 2022. Mm-hmm. That lease could be broken at any moment. Just realistic, just because of the way the real estate is and where the area is, that property is actually far more valuable to the county, Prince George's County, where it's located, as a mixed commercial site with, retail, housing, and maybe some office space than it is for them to have the Redskins have a stadium on that land, probably because of all the tax incentives and breaks that they're giving them at this time. So me, realistically, I would say 4 to 5 years. If he gets the renderings by the end of the NFL season, he can start the site selection. There are some people that are speculating because of the uproar over the name. It'll be hard for D.C. to allow them to come back to the District of Columbia. I really don't see that happening.
Yeah,
that's not going
to
happen.
What? Can them come to D.C.?
No, them having a hard time. Oh, yeah, them stopping yeah, them coming totally, back yeah. to D.C. Yeah. Realistically, if you ask me, I would say the old RFK site, you'll probably get something like the city to clear the site for them. And it just makes sense because of all the access roads and the access to 295. And just also with the growing, how can I say it? With the change in the population in the area by the stadium, they'll need something like that, the stadium, to revitalize that area. So a new stadium will be perfect for that, and I see this happening 2014, by the end of 2019, 2020 at the latest, if you ask me. It's just because people keep going to and from the stadium now at FedEx Field. It's becoming a nightmare for everyone involved. Cool. People are fans are stating how much they dislike traveling to PG County to the stadium.
Yeah.
And plus there isn't a whole lot around the stadium for fans, so...
No, I see what I mean. I think the exciting things to have it in DC is just, and also when you hear Daniel Snyder talk about the new stadium, is to have that whole RFK feel to it. When you hear that, I think it gives most diehard Redskins fans chill bumps just to know that you can have that you would feel like you're really impacting the game. You're really acting as if you're the 12th man in a stadium like that, the one he actually has in mind.
Yeah, where if anyone who's old enough to remember RFK, who's ever attended a game there, that bottom bowl, once it fans got really excited and it started to actually move.
Yeah, it started to rock.
So I think what he wants to do is he wants to create an atmosphere that's similar to what Seattle has with that 12th man. It'll be interesting. I wouldn't be excited for this area, because possibly you can get a Final Four in this area if it's a dome stadium.
Yeah, I got
and that
you.
that would be really great for this area for the Final Four to come here.
We all know Dan Snyder he ain't thinking about that. But that would be cool though to have a Final Four.
Yeah, it would be cool to have a Final Four here.
Final Four.
Yeah, Super Bowl, Final Four. We always DC at the Verizon Center. We're always lucky enough to get some regional games. For the Final Four, but to have an actual Final Four here.
How come we can get a Final Four here in the Verizon Center?
Just because it wouldn't allow for the maximum capacity. I think the maximum capacity at Verizon Center is 40,000. No, it's probably less than that. Mm. Probably like 25,000 or 30,000 for a Final Four. They want something like 60,000 to 70,000 people.
Interesting. Well, let's cross our fingers. Redskin fans, diehard skin fans. Let's cross our fingers and just see if we can get a stadium in DC, an RFK like stadium. In D.C., because I would be ecstatic to have that. And I live in Prince George County, but I would definitely be I would love to be in that type of environment, that type of arena. And I don't like going to Redskins games, but I would definitely check that out. To be honest with you, I would let annoying Redskins fans bother me. And I'm a diehard fan. And some of y'all are annoying. Let's go to the roster moves. We had to cut down the roster 53, practice squad and whatnot. Are you surprised? Evan Royster was cut. I guess everybody's really surprised that Seastrom got cut. Well, not that he just got cut, but didn't even get on the practice squad. Was that the right move? Do you think they made the right moves?
Well, I'm surprised that they let three backs go, even though they brought back Christian Thompson and added him to the practice squad. To me, just personally, just seeing without the body of work that Evan Royster had, he could be a productive back in the NFL. Christian Thompson, that NFL coach.
Chris Thompson.
They always have a saying: you have to be dependable, available, and reliable. And just with his injuries, the past 2 years, he hasn't been available for them. So, and they can't depend on him. Lake Seastrom, I'm a little bit surprised because after the draft, Jay Gruden was saying how this guy, he adds a totally different dimension to all of it than the other backs had. His shiftiness, his elusiveness. A lot of people started thinking that he would kind of give them that element that Giovanni Bernard gave him, Jay Gruden, when he was in Cincinnati. So I'm kind of surprised to see him let go, specifically because he was a draft pick also. But Silas Red, a guy who was a workhorse back at USC last year, he gives you a very capable backup, should be capable backup if Alfred Morris is let go. And then Roy Helu Jr., if anyone, I'm surprised he made it. I understand he's a good pass catcher, but, just realistically looking at it and the running style you want to implement, Evan Royster is probably a far more comparable back to what you want to do with as far as Alfred Morris. Roy Helu Jr. is a guy who's more of a has good hands out of the backfield, but he's been around. He's kind of ran his course to me. He hasn't provided anything exceptional. He hasn't shown me anything from the. And I'm not to say I watch the games, but I haven't seen. I don't watch them intently like you do. So
no, dispute to that is that Evan Royce. The problem with Evan Royce, I agree with you. I think Evan Royce could be a starting running back on certain teams. I really believe it, especially in the zone blocking scheme. That's why, truth be told, the Cleveland Browns are very interested in picking him up. Obviously because Kyle Shanahan is on that is a part of the coaching staff. But Evan Royce, the problem with Evan Royce is that he's too similar to Alfred Morris. What I mean by that is they're both zone running backs, and they're both not fast. running backs. Now, Evan Royston, to a lot of people, is a better zone runner than Alfred Morris, but he's too similar to Alfred Morris. So you need something different. So when you compare him to even a Roy Helu, Roy Helu's faster, better hands. Even though Evan Royster doesn't have bad hands, but he has better hands. So you need something different. That's why they have a problem with Evan Royster being cut. I like Evan Royster. Truth be told, to be honest with you, I like Evan Royster more than a lot of the Redskins running backs. But I know his situation. He's too similar to the other backs. So then you have Helu, who can catch, and he's good in pass. He's good in pass pro, which Morris isn't really that good in pass pro. So Helu is better in pass pro. He can do a lot more. He's more of a versatile running back compared to a Royster. Then you got three with Cyrus Redd. Now, the Cyrus Redd thing kind of caught me off guard, because to me, Cyrus Redd, he is, again, another in the mold of a Alfred Morris, but he has more quicks and more shakeability. So I like him. I think he can be a solid running back, but that's when it comes to Seastrom. I think Seastrom is a guy who brought in that different dimension. I think if you had kept Seastrom, you would have three backs all doing three different things. All right, so you make your backfield versatile. So you bring in Seastrom, he has that blazing breakaway speed. Helu has good straight line speed. He ran a 4.3, but straight line speed. You got Alfred Morris as that grinder. So you would have three different running backs. I give credit due. I think Cyrus Redd outplayed a lot of the running backs in preseason, so he deserves it. But if you're looking for something different, I would have went with Seastrom. And I think that was my issue with the whole thing, is that you could have three different running backs. Now, they said Seastrom wasn't good in pass protection. He couldn't catch the ball in practice. And I guess practice weighed more than the actual preseason games. And that could play a part. But I would have kept Seastrom. Chris Thompson, I am annoyed that he made the practice squad. I think he's a guy who I don't see it. He's had his opportunities here for a fast running back, a guy who can make plays. I haven't seen it yet. And I think I would have kept Seastrom over Chris Thompson.
Well, Seastrom will be out there, you know. So, you know, no one's picked him up yet for their practice squad. So, you know, there's always the NFL, the bottom of that roster always continually turns over. So you never know. By the end of the season, maybe he's back in Washington suiting up for the football team.
I doubt it. But it does say something that, you know, if nobody else picks him up, then maybe he's not as valued. Maybe he's not as high talent as we think he is as fans. Did you see any other surprising cuts?
I'm not going to say it surprised me, because this guy, as we said, you know, he hasn't been available. Phillip Thomas, they added him to the practice squad. They let him go and added back to the practice squad. Just because he's 1 year removed from being
he was a rookie last year.
He was a rookie last year.
Didn't play. This would have been a rookie.
Didn't play. I guess he had other injuries in training camp. So they just said, okay, we'll let this guy. We'll see what he can do on the practice squad. We don't want to use one of our 53 roster spots to evaluate him. So, you know, I was kind of – one part of me is kind of surprised, but then again, it's not, because, you know, he was part of the old regime, and Mike Shanahan's been let go. Bruce Allen wants to really put his stamp on this team and say, this is my team, these are my players. And, you know, he wasn't really a Bruce guy. So, you know, with Phillip Thomas being let go, that's kind of one of the things that surprised me.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Phillip Thomas was the one, the main one that surprised me. But again, on the practice squad, I'm happy. At least I'm happy he's on the practice squad, because from all the reports we heard him when he came out the draft, that he would be somebody that would be a starter, and he would, you know, he would be
a potential ball hawk.
Yeah, exactly. So they were pairing him with obviously Amerson and Bakari Rambo, thinking these guys would be something special down the road. Even though they're late picks, or guys, they assumed that would play well. So I'm glad they kept him. Obviously, they still value his talent. Another individual got cut that surprised me, other than Phillip Thomas. I like Richard Crawford, but I saw him play his last preseason game, and he didn't do it.
Rob Jackson, for me.
He got cut early, though.
Yeah, he got cut earlier. Yeah.
I was surprised, too.
I was surprised. I know he got cut earlier, but that's just another guy who surprised me, just because he'd been so solid filling in for Brian Arakpo. You know, this year they're concentrating more on speed on the outside, from the outside backer position. But, you know, Rob Jackson, he's kind of one of those guys that he was a grinder. He didn't do anything exceptionally, but he did everything on par average. And you know, just realistically, if you're building a 53-man roster, specifically on defense, you need those type of guys who, you know, who stay down till they come up.
No, I agree. I was surprised he got cut. He's a guy who who paid attention to detail. And I think that's very important in the NFL playing defense, to pay attention to detail. He was a guy who did that. And he did a great job for us, made big plays for us down the road. I mean, in the past. And I expected him to be a part of it, a part of this defense in the present, and also be a part of special teams. But obviously that didn't pan out for him. I don't think anybody picked him up yet.
When I heard, I think that the Raiders had gave him a trial. I'm not sure if the Raiders picked him up, though. Okay.
So, I mean, if he's still out there, he'll still be out. He can still be out there, so you never know. Like Will T was referring to Seastrom, so you never know. Let's go to the season. Season's about to start. The Jay Gruden RG3 era is about to begin Sunday. It's going down.
Yeah. Actually, this past Saturday, Robert Griffin actually received a very high accolade at Baylor. Yeah. Yeah, he was bronzed. He has a bronze statue out front of their new stadium. For a 24-year-old, that's a lot.
That's a lot. Obviously, that shows that he must be a character guy down there from a dude in Texas. I mean, down to Baylor.
Well, they think very highly of him because he's the first and only Heisman Trophy winner from Baylor. Some will say that's the new stadium is the stadium he helped create because of the buzz that he brought to that team from a national spotlight perspective. But that's a lot of weight to go into a show to start the season off. You know, you've been immortalized at Baylor. No, I'm just being realistic. For a 24-year-old, you're being immortalized almost like a deity down at Waco, Texas at Baylor. Then you're starting a new season with a guy who you believe has 100% confidence in you, and you know there's no more built-in excuses because this is your offense, this is the player's offense. So that's a lot of stress that's going to be going into his shoulders come Sunday down in Houston.
So what do you expect from him on Sunday?
Realistically, I expect possibly something similar that we saw two seasons ago when in New Orleans. Anything short of that, I would be shocked just because of, once again, the undue pressure he's put on himself during this offseason with the subtle jabs at Mike Shanahan and saying that Jay Gruden has 100% confidence in him. This is his offense. This is his team. This is his guys. So I would be shocked if anything less than what he showed us against New Orleans Saints in New Orleans two seasons ago.
He better bring his A game. That's all I'm going to say. He better bring his A game. He has the talent. I've always said, I'm going to keep saying it. He has the talent all the way around, all around him. And even if he plays average, he should put up decent numbers with the talent he has around him. So I'm going to say this one time, he should better put up numbers. Pressure is on him. I don't care about I understand the statue, but pressure's on him because if he doesn't put up numbers with DeSean Jackson, Pierre Garçon, Roberts in the slot, you put Santana in the slot with him, Jordan Reed, and Alfred Morris is your running back. If you don't put up numbers, you're the problem. Not your offense. Don't blame the offensive line. Don't blame the wide receivers and say they're not getting open. You're the problem. So, and I have all faith in RG3. I believe he's going to have a great game because, one, he's going to Texas. That's where he balls. He's going to Texas. He's got a lot of people. I feel like, you know, when people doubt him, this is when he shines. I mean, especially being healthy, when people doubt him and say he can't do something, this is when he shines. And like you said, I think he put a lot of pressure on himself to produce because, you know, blaming the other regime, this is it. He can't – nobody blame but himself. He can't say Jay Gruden set him up. He's got to do it. So, in my opinion, yeah, I think he's going to play well on our Urban Sports Team Facebook page. My girl Amy, she said, not much. She didn't expect a lot from RG3. She said, this is the reason why. She says, I think he's scared to play on his knee. I just don't think he is as confident as he was before the injury, and that sucks because he was amazing.
Well, first of all, thanks for your comments.
Thanks, Amy. Appreciate it.
I agree with her to a certain extent. This will be the first time where his knee is actually 100% healthy. You know, he doesn't have the brace. He complained last year about the big brace.
You're like a little girl.
Yeah, then he also, he didn't say it outright, but, you know, he suggested that not having a full off season coming into last season affected him, his timing with his receivers and some of his throwing mechanics. But this year you have no excuses. Mike Shanahan sat you down for the last, three games last year? So you could be totally healthy going into an offseason. So you have a full offseason. You have a revamped offensive line, a coach who believes in you, New weapons on the outside and Roberts and DeSean Jackson. Also, you have Jordan Reed, like you stated. Mm-hmm. So you have no excuses built in. If anything, it's all on you now. You know, one thing. All in. I mean, all in for week one, like you said before.
All in for week one.
But you know what superstar, young quarterback doesn't have these problems?
Andrew Luck.
Andrew Luck and Russell Wilson. Yeah. You want to know why? Because they shut their damn mouth and just get better in the offseason.
Exactly. Russell Wilson's got his improved. I'm not going to put – but I want to put Russell Wilson in that argument. I know he's won a Super Bowl because I think Russell – to me, Russell Wilson has support. What I mean by that is that he knows that when he steps on that field, that defense is going to lock it down. So it's not like he has that much pressure compared to like an RG3 or an Andrew Luck. Now, I will say something about this about Andrew Luck because he's number one. And there was a lot – some people thought that RG3 was better than Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck shuts his mouth, like Will T says, and bowls. That Colts defense is nothing spectacular.
That Colts offensive line is nothing spectacular. That running game is nothing spectacular.
And they rely totally – 110%. So that's the difference between anybody else. That Colts offense relies 110% on Andrew Luck. Seattle relies on Wilson. I'm not saying they don't, but they rely on Marshawn Lynch to set the tone. That Colts team relies on Luck to produce at a high level. RG3, you want to be that star? But see, Russell Wilson doesn't talk about trying to be the star. RG3, you want to be that star? You need to step up like an Andrew Luck. Seriously.
Absolutely. So it'll be, I mean, you have a multiple storylines going into Sunday's game. So it will definitely be exciting to see how he shows up and what he does. I know I'll be looking forward to it because in D.C. at 1 o'clock, that's the only game they're going to show. So
I'll be looking forward to it.
I won't even be watching football this Sunday.
What are you doing this Sunday?
I got a bike ride, 120 miles.
Okay, yeah, I can tell you in that mode, man.
Yeah, 120 miles going from Maryland to Pennsylvania and back.
Oh, you the man. You are the man. I'll take the game for you. And you will probably be watching it. And the Green Turtle calling folks, come watch the game with the Green Turtle with me.
If I get back early enough, then I'll make my way down there to watch the game with him. But
I heard he's like.
That's he's like overly emotional. Yeah. He's locked the place down.
Everybody knows that dude over
yeah,
there.
Yeah, man.
That's crazy. He's overly emotional. I'm overly emotional at home.
Nah, he's overly emotional when he watches the game. About to break cups.
Oh, see, I do that. That's why I need to be in my own complex so I can
listen. You guys got to realize you do not own the team.
I own this team.
Your life does not depend on this.
I own this team. I mentally own them.
Ownership.
I mentally own this team.
Can you go to Landover right now and get in the FedEx field?
I would sneak in.
If Dan Snyder saw you, what do you think he'll say?
I said, Daniel, I'm with that Redskins name stuff. I actually would have said the same thing.
He'll be like, here's my keys. Thanks for parking my car.
Hey, nah. He'd be like, I don't even know what he would say. He wouldn't say that stuff.
nah, I'm just kidding.
He wouldn't say all that.
Nah, I'm just kidding.
Hopefully he wouldn't.
I hope.
He did say that's a lawsuit. That's money. We may be in the same tax brackets. Anyway, obviously the Texans have some defensive weapons.
That'd be an understatement.
Yes, they have a lot of defense.
They have the best defensive player in the football. And
we'll talk about that later, too. I don't think it's the best.
We'll talk about that.
But how should Gruden call this game going against Clowney, Watt, and company?
Cushing.
Yeah.
Then what's the cornerback that they have?
You're talking about, I'm going to say Williams, but I feel like he went that. Did he go to Bama?
Nah, I forgot his name. Can't be. He's important, but not that important since I forgot his name.
Jackson?
Yeah, Jackson. And then, you know, you had the safety, Williams, who's been
ninjas out.
Yeah. I think Jay Gruden, for the first couple of series, should play it close to the chest. Make sure that RG3 is comfortable, that he can develop a rhythm with his wide receivers. Get his confidence up. We've seen what he can do when he gets his confidence going early. You know, when he isn't rattled, when he doesn't have to, when his feet aren't jittery. He's been very efficient, as we saw during that first season. This last season, not so much, for whatever reason. Established a run game with Alfred Morris. Make sure Alfred Morris gets in there, gets you. If the first play is a run play, you want to make sure Alfred Morris gets you at least 4 yards. So you're in second and six territory, which makes you calling the game a little bit easier. You know, you don't have Clowney and you don't have Watt pinning their ears back to come and get RG3. So those are some things that he should do early to kind of. And then also, you want to get DeSean Jackson involved early, because I think anyone, me being a former Eagles fan, I know that if you don't get DeSean Jackson involved early, he kind of becomes aloof. He doesn't run his routes as precise when it comes to blocking. He doesn't put in that effort. So you want to get DeSean Jackson the ball early.
Talk about that a little more, because like you said, you being a former Eagles fan, the impact of DeSean Jackson, what you're saying is that if he doesn't get the ball early, he's not going to impact the whole game. So elaborate on that.
Just well, with DeSean Jackson, you have one of the few guys who can actually take the top off of the defense, per se, meaning that there's no one corner that can really run with him. You have to put a safety over top. When DeSean Jackson, if you don't, Andy Reid, specifically the games against the Redskins, against football team, Washington football team.
Yeah, the Redskins. Laron Landry, especially. I know what you're referring to.
Yeah, he made sure to get DeSean Jackson involved so he wouldn't be as aloof. Any Eagles fan who used to watch DeSean Jackson knows if he doesn't get involved early in the game, he doesn't run his routes as hard when it comes to blocking. He's not going to give you 100% maximum effort when it comes to run blocking anyway. But he doesn't try as hard. So you want to make sure that, you know, you at least make you allow Houston Texas defense to know that he's out there. Get him to run a 9 route, whether it's a quick out, get him the ball and he can do his thing with the ball in his hands after the catch. But you want to make sure during that first series it isn't Pierre Garçon across the middle, Jordan Reed for an out pass, Andre Roberts. You want to make sure that you're getting DeSean Jackson the ball, give him some opportunities, give him some looks, give him an ability to make a play. Or if you don't, you'll regret it.
Yes, yeah, I agree. I think they should get DeSean Jackson involved early in this game with screen passes and whatnot, just to get – so that will help out DeSean Jackson and definitely will help out RG3. We do the same for Pierre Garçon, because we know what he is, what he can do after the catch. So my thing is get them involved, but most importantly to me, Alfred Morris out. Like, let this dude take over the game. Feed the beast. Lack of a better term, feed the beast. I want to see Alfred Morris get touches to a point where it's like almost 10 touches in that first quarter. If it has to be like grind him out to a point
touch,
where
oh well, like you know 10 touch, touches not carries but 10 touches, yeah.
10 touches, and then to a point where now all right that Houston Texans secondary is now trying to creep up, then DeSean Jackson is an impact player, you know what I mean? Or then you can run play action and hit Jordan Reed in the middle with a seam route or something. Get them committed to Alfred Morris. That's the main thing to me. If you can pound from what I saw in the preseason, that O-line likes to run block, all right. Pass protection is a whole different story, but that O line likes to run blocks. You get to a point where you can just set them up for the big play. It's there, but you gotta utilize Alfred Morris.
One thing I forgot to mention: I'm interested to see if they run the read option.
Read option.
I want to see if they're going to run the read option.
I think you'll see a little bit of it. I won't hold that.
Well, we know in the past that he stated that he doesn't like the read option.
RG3?
Yeah.
Yes.
He wants to be considered a drop back quarterback.
I'm telling you, this dude is like the biggest BSer in the world. He's going to do whatever he's going to do what it takes for him to reach fame. All right. So
yeah, but no, I'm
they're
just
gonna limit it. They're not going to do a lot of it.
Yeah, I know they're not going to do a lot of it, but I want to see how much is it, you know, is it like it was his rookie year, like 15% of the offense? It was 10 to 15% of every game plan.
It's going to be less than that. I think you're going to see more short passing attack, more of a short passing attack. And if that does permit, like, I wouldn't be surprised you see it against Jadeveon Clowney, just see if he overcommits. But that's a dangerous game you're going to play if you do that to Jadeveon Clowney.
If you run those naked boots.
He can smack him. That's a dangerous game. I can see him trying it to see if he goes up the field. But you better be careful. You better see something on tape for you to see him doing it consistently. If he does it consistently in the game, then yeah. But if you're trying to go off a gut feeling, be careful. Be very careful, because that guy will smack you.
Yeah, so it's going to be very interesting to see how this game plays out, how it's called from how Jake Gruden calls the offense. And also, it'll be interesting to see how Bill O'Brien calls the offense for the Houston Texans. You know, a lot of people, he doesn't have a Tom Brady like he used to have in New England. Mm-hmm. But you're bound to see elements of that New England offense in his game plan, you know. They just recently traded for Ryan Mallett. They're going to go into the season with Ryan Fitzpatrick as the starting quarterback.
Yeah, Ryan Mallett going to take that job. Yeah. We'll talk about that too later.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later. Yeah, but, you know, you still have to remember that on the outside, Houston has some wide receivers that are very tough to match up with, being DeAndre Hopkins and Andre Johnson.
Andre Johnson is still the truth. He's coming, and what's going to be scary about Andre Johnson, it's going to be a challenge for the Redskins defense, is that he's playing the first game of the season, so he's healthy.
The
first game of the season, he's healthy. There's no excuse. He's healthy.
Yeah, so I'm guessing maybe D'Angelo Hall follow suit as he does in prior years, and he'll follow Andre Johnson all around the field.
And it should be a man over top of that too.
I definitely agree.
It shouldn't be one on one, in my opinion, because you're getting Andre Johnson healthy. You're not getting him in the second or third game. You're getting the best of Andre. You're going to get the best Andre Johnson right now because he's fresh. You're going to get the best Andre Johnson.
Yep.
So D'Angelo Hall does need help. But we're speaking of the Redskins defense. They look good in the preseason. So
good. I'm gonna go out on a limb. I'm not gonna say good. They actually look like they could be a top 10 defense.
They really did.
It looked as if maybe Jim Haslett is uncaged, is the shackles are off of him this year. You know, there are reports coming out of the park that Mike Shanahan wanted to run a lot of cover three, wanted to run a lot of zone coverages, and it looks like Haslett is going to unlock the defense, is going to run zone blitzes, is going to come from any and everywhere, like he did in Pittsburgh, and also as he did in his other previous stops.
No, that's what it looks like to me. It looks like when you watch that defense, they're flying. Like they're flying to the ball, they're rallying to the ball. The pass, the folks rushing the passer, we're getting to the quarterback. The safeties are smacking. I mean, Bakari Rambo looks better. You know what I mean? These players are stepping up. And you could tell they're excited to play for Haslett. You know, last year in the preseason, they didn't play the same way. They weren't stopping the run. This preseason, they're stopping the run. They're flying, and you can see the energy. The energy is just different, you know, with the defense side of the ball. So do you see this as a real strength going into week one, compared to, you know, because most of the experts thought that this would be the weakness of the Redskins team, but it looks like from preseason that this defense looks real.
The defense does look good. I can't even lie. You know, usually I'd be the first to jump on the board and say,
"Sure, I know."
But no, Arakpo and Kerrigan—they're getting, they're pushing the pocket in from the sides, and then also up the middle. Baker. And also Hatcher looked good that first preseason game they played too. And also Keenan Robinson is flying to the ball.
Oh my God, he's a middle linebacker.
He's flying to the ball. Yeah.
Sorry, it's an upgrade.
From a speed perspective.
No, it's an upgrade period.
And also
right
in the passing game.
No, it's an upgrade period right now. I'm sorry. I mean, London was great when he was healthy and when he was younger. For the Redskins, younger with the Redskins. I'm not saying, you know, in his career, but younger with the Redskins. As he's aged, he's looked horrible.
Yeah, he was a liability in the past game,
and he, truth be told, he was missing tackles. He started missing tackles in terms of even last year, he was missing tackles. So this guy, Keenan Robinson, not going to say anything about tackling, but in the past game, I don't think you'll have that situation when he's going up against a tight end. He's athletic enough to make a play on the ball. And also, in terms of covering sideline to sideline, sideline to sideline, even tackling a running back or a wide receiver or even a quarterback on the flat, he's there. I see this team defensively is an upgrade on various positions. And I think even Emerson looks better in his second year. I think there's even depth, and that's my main thing. There's depth in the pass rushing with the rookie. Trent Murphy. Thank you,
Trent Murphy.
Trent Murphy. Then you even got a couple other young guys who look good. You got Jumpy Gather's son who looked good last preseason.
Absolutely,
nephew. Look good.
Oh, he's like a building. He's like 6'8", 330.
Which you can put in as a nose, and you know what? That's the type of nose I'm looking for. Not like Cofield. I'm looking for a nose like that. 6'8". And who can just take on blocks.
Yeah, he's a building. Yeah. You can't move him.
That's what you want. So you got, to me, there's depth there. And Miller, the dude, the kid Miller, who looked good the last preseason game, which is on every play. So I'm really into it. I think this defense could be something special because I think it's more depth. That's my main thing. Like, the depth is better. And hopefully, you know, and hopefully they'll play like they played in the preseason.
Yeah, just to echo your sentiments, only thing, I guess the biggest question is the special teams. Will they perform?
That scared me.
Better than they did. Anything is better than they did last year.
Yeah.
In all honesty, if you look at just the offense's performance last year, the special teams really affected that because of the change in the field position. It affected the offense and defense. Defense specifically because the defense always had to play on a short field because of the yards that the special team allowed during the returns. So it'll be, I think that's the biggest question heading into week one for Washington against Texas. How will that special teams impact the game? So it'll be, you know, I'm excited like everyone else is that football is back for us. And it'll be interesting to see how it plays out week one.
So, okay, so what are the keys to Redskins victory against the Texans?
One, you need to get pressure. Defensive pressure from the end. Arakpo, you know, you're getting $10 million this year. You stated you're a top five pass rusher. You need to go out off the back and prove it with at least two sacks, or maybe he needs to make two impact plays for the Redskins defense, for the Washington's defense. Keep slipping. Jeez.
It's okay. It's the Redskins. You're right. Yeah,
you're right.
That's the name of the team.
Yeah.
Nothing's changed.
But, Arakpo needs to make two impact plays. As I stated, you need to get DeSean Jackson involved in the game early. The read option. You need to incorporate the read option to open up the middle of the field for Robert Griffin to make those passes across the middle of the field. If you just looked, whether it was read option or play action, when he had the ability to hold the linebackers and make those plays across the middle of the field, the offense looked better.
Yeah.
You know, and last but not least, Jay Gruden needs to spread the love offensively to those wide receivers. Make sure they all stay involved
and stay happy,
which will be interesting to see how he does that.
And that's the thing, stay happy. As you know, there are a lot of weapons. All right, the keys to victory. One is, like I said earlier, to make sure you pound Alfred Morris.
Pound Alfred Morris?
Damn, don't sound right, man. What's wrong with me? Make sure you run Alfred Morris like a runaway slave. There you go. That sounds better.
Okay. I'll take that.
All right. So make sure Alfred Morris has a big impact in this game. If you can do that, take the pressure on RG3 because we still need RG3 still learning to be a pocket passer. That's what he wants to be. So just use Alfred Morris. Secondly, put pressure on Fitzpatrick. He's a guy that is sackable. He's very sackable, and he gets skittish when he gets hit.
Gets very frenetic.
Yeah, frenetic and skittish. Yeah, exactly. So it's up to Kerrigan and Arakpo to put constant pressure. And it's a homecoming game for Arakpo. Again, it's Texas. He went to the University of UT, so he needs the ball. So this is the place for him, honestly, to really show out. And I expect him to show out, it being a home game for him.
Yeah, like I said, he needs two impact plays, whether that's a big third down tackle for loss in the run game or maybe a sack, strip, fumble. He needs two impact plays. You can't walk away with everyone like, what did Brian Arakpo do against Dwayne Brown? You can't have that happen.
Yeah, exactly. You got to know he's on the field.
You have to know he's on the field. And I think that Haslett's going to move him around a lot this year and find the mismatch for him.
Yeah.
If that's not working for him playing on the left side. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be interesting to see two impact plays.
And you're going to see Arakpo, and you're going to see Arakpo, Murphy, and Kerrigan in the lineup together. So you're going to see some plays where you got all your best pass rushers out there, like a lot like the Giants used to do.
And Hatcher too.
I'm sorry, mm-hmm. And Hatcher. So you're going to have impact plays. And also, to be honest with you, I want to see Jarvis Jenkins step up. He's been a couple years removed from that knee surgery, tearing his ACL. It's time to ball now. You played well there for your rookie year in the preseason before you tore it. Everybody looked at you like the next big thing in terms of impacting this team on the defensive side of the ball. I want to see him do what he's supposed to do. Hatcher's here now, pretty much has replaced him. So it's time for him to play up. Once he gets into the rotate, when it is his time to play, to produce.
Yep.
So anyway, I expect my team to win. I do. But it is going to be difficult. I think people are really crapping on the Texans, thinking that the Texans will suck. That defense is going to be a problem, and we're going down to Texas.
And they have a run game. Even though Arian Foster isn't what he used to be.
They have a run game. They do have a run game. They have a run game. I see the Redskins pretty much trying to – I see the Redskins stacking the box right for to stop Foster. That could be a big mistake, though, obviously, with Andre Johnson. But I think Foster will be the main concern for the Washington Redskins going into week one against the Houston Texans. But anyway, it's about time for a commercial break. We'll be talking about the Texans making some big moves, signing J.J. Watt to a $100 million contract.
$51 million guaranteed.
Exactly, because he's the so-called best defensive player in the game. And also, they made a trade. They got Ryan Mallett, potentially maybe their starting quarterback, not in week one, but maybe in the next upcoming weeks.
I didn't understand the timing of that trade, but yeah, like I said, earlier.
Yeah, should have been earlier. Anyway, it's the Urban Sports thing.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Hi, this is Wally Akinso from the Urban Sports Scene. Earlier today, I had a sit-down interview with Jim Gray, which focused on a hard decision that I had to make.
How many people know your decision right now?
In all realness, Jim, that's a dumbass question. I should smack your ass right now.
One hand or two hands?
If you keep playing, I'm going to smack you with two hands.
When did you decide?
The idea of me smacking you came about 30 seconds ago.
You still a nail biter?
Don't worry about my nails. They won't be in the way when I smack you. Don't worry about it, all right?
We've had everybody else biting their nails, so I guess it's time for them to stop chewing.
Jim, if I was you, I wouldn't worry about everybody else.
The answer to the question everybody wants to know, what's your decision?
I smacked Jim Gray.
That was the conclusion you woke up with this morning.
Yes, Jim, that was the decision that had me tossing and turning this morning. It was hard, but I felt that my left and my right would make an impact on your face. And I was right.
Why?
Why? That's why. You think you know? You have no idea. You don't know the decisions that anybody within the USS has to make.
Yeah! For the first time, it's going down history, baby. New 3-6 Mafia, featuring 8-Ball and MJG, Young Buck. It's a Tennessee thing. We gotta stay.
Until I die. Stay till I die. I got issues. I'm so sorry. Anyway, like I said, we're back from commercial break. So we're gonna talk about the Houston Texans and their moves. The last couple of days, actually, J.J. Watt signed a $100 million deal, 51 guaranteed. I think 6 years.
6 years.
Six.
Oh yeah. So I had a question, folks. Is you said it. I ain't say it, but you're saying that J.J. Watt is the best defensive player in the NFL.
I'm a production guy.
Okay.
So if we're going off the production, we're going off the numbers, we're going off how he impacts the game, I would say yes. I would say now there are guys who are better talent than J.J. Watt. But if we go as defensive player as far as production, then it's J.J. Watt hands down. Yeah, I think that was you.
Oh, it's my phone. Never mind. Nah. That's not my phone. Not my main phone. I'm about to say it. Okay. I'm just scared of a Jesus out of him. That vibrating sound. Good God. But, let's see.
Funny. I was watching Fight Club yesterday. Mm. Came on TV. I don't know if you, have you ever seen Fight Club?
No, I've never watched it. Okay. With Brad Pitt, right?
Yeah, with Brad Pitt and Edward Norton. There's a scene in Fight Club where Edward Norton, his luggage didn't come through the airport. Mm-hmm. And he was saying, he asked a security guard about, the security guard said, yeah, there's a, your luggage was vibrating. And then he said, vibrating? He said, yeah, we usually, when it comes to vibrating luggage, we try not to assume ownership of a certain sex toy that's in it. I knew it. And that made me think about the vibrator, so that's why.
I thought it was going to be some sexual reference.
Yeah, I don't want to say the whole thing. I know. You know, we got the babies listening.
We got the babies out here. Anyway, I posed the same question on a Facebook group called Good All Around Sports Convo. Man, Mikael Curtis said, I mean, let's be real, who is better than him at that position? If you disagree, then who is the best defensive player? My man Jonathan Banks put Von Miller. That was his suggestion. It's not healthy enough, but he had that 1 year. I know.
He had 1 year. He had his rookie year.
I said, because I think he is the best defensive player in the game, Earl Thomas. I think Earl Thomas is the best defensive player in the game. Had an individual, my man Darian, also he agreed with me, says I was going to say Earl Thomas as well, but he plays with a couple of awesome players on that front four and Sherman. Although I think Sherman benefits from Earl, but Watts doesn't play with Pro Bowl defensive teammates, so I say Watts plays the run well and can rush the passer. Well, I'll say this. J.J. Watt does have a couple individuals. That Cushing is no joke.
Brian Cushing is no joke.
When healthy, you see what happens when everybody's healthy. That defense balls. It's not just J.J. Watt. That's an entire defensive front.
Yeah. Well, that was under Wade Phillips. Romeo Crennel as their defensive coordinator. So it'll be interesting to see how Wade Phillips like to move J.J. Watt around. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see how Romeo Crennel uses J.J. Watt. But just me, of course, Earl Thomas and Richard Sherman are definitely within the top three of that conversation when it comes to the best defensive player. But if we're just going off of production and impact, mm-hmm. I have to give it to J.J. Watt. Now, I'm not saying he's the most talented defensive player. If we go off of sheer talent, I think Ndamukong Suh gives him a run for his money, and also Robert Quinn.
Quinn's a beast.
Yeah, both of those guys give him a run for their money. But as far as a guy who maximizes his talent and gives you everything, every play when he's on the field, and a guy who makes offensive coordinators stay up late at night and also offensive linemen, I got to give it to J.J. Watt.
See, but that's why I got to go with Earl Thomas. And I think people, they mentioned Richard Sherman. Richard Sherman can do what he can do. What he does because of Earl Thomas. I think Earl Thomas makes Richard Sherman better. He makes Maxwell better, a cornerback who to me isn't even that good. So he's an individual that you know if you get beat, he's there to have your back, and he flies. I mean, we're talking about a guy to me that reminds me of he's a blend of Troy Polamalu and Ed Reed. Not as good. I mean, I'm not saying he's better than either, but he's at this point in terms of the platform of safeties, he's it. Like there's no better safety, to be honest with you. You can mention names, but there's no better safety than Eric.
No, there's definitely no better safety. And then you also have the point that there's no better defensive lineman than J.J. Watt.
Yeah, I'm not knocking that. We're apples and oranges
when it comes to those.
These are
guys,
two great prominent ball players. I think we get overshadowed by the greatness of Earl Thomas because of the bragging style of Richard Sherman, and now he's promoted himself pretty well, and he's really good. Don't get me wrong, he's good, but we forget that to me the best player on defense is by far Earl Thomas, and
I agree with you.
So, but I think Earl Thomas is hindered by having a Richard Sherman because Richard Sherman, what he's known for, so it's hard. Watt deserves it. Watt's a guy who does a lot. He plays the run. He rushes the passer. He knocks down. You know, he bats. Footballs down.
Plus, if you're going to pay a guy this amount of money, he's a good, wholesome guy to be the face of the franchise.
Exactly. So he's a guy you can actually promote for your team, and not just your defense, but for your whole entire team. Let's move on. Still with the Texans, they've traded to get Ryan Mallett. You were saying that you think this trade was too early.
I alluded to it before we went to break. I can understand the reasoning for waiting this long to get a guy like Ryan Mallett, because A, you want to see with the quarterbacks you have, you wanted to see do any of those guys step up and distinguish themselves as the leader of this franchise, which clearly they didn't. That's the reason why you went and got Ryan Mallett. Two, Bill O'Brien already knows what he has in Ryan Mallett. And three, if you bring in a guy like Ryan Mallett this late, you're doing essentially probably the same things that he did when he was in New England, when he was the offensive coordinator. So Ryan Mallett is very comfortable probably with the verbiage and also the passing concepts and passing routes for this offense. So he could bring him in now Of course, you know, he has to get the timing with Andre Johnson, DeAndre Hopkins. But realistically, if Ryan Fitzgerald doesn't pan out.
Ryan Patrick doesn't pan out.
You could start Ryan Mallett week three, week four, or I don't know how soon their off week is. Is it early in the season or late in the season?
Sure.
But you know, you definitely you get him in now, and if Fitzpatrick struggles, then you just wait until after the bye week and you can start Ryan Mallett.
If he struggles, to me, they're not a believer in Fitzpatrick. Andre Johnson wasn't a believer in Fitzpatrick. That's why he was trying to, you know, he was trying to get out of Houston. He wants a quarterback to play with, a guy who can, you know, this is a big season for Andre Johnson. He doesn't want to be known as a guy who's done. He wants to, you know, continue to put up big numbers, and especially when you see some of these the wide receivers like a Dez Bryant, Larry Fitzgerald, obviously Megatron, A.J. Green, putting up numbers, and he thinks he's at the same level, but he can't do it because the quarterback play. So if you feel that Ryan Mallett is a guy who can stretch the field, who can get the ball to Andre Johnson, and if Andre Johnson feels that way too, because Andre Johnson is still the predominant player in that organization, if Ryan Mallett can get the ball to him, because Ryan Mallett knows the offense, he should and could play week two, week three. This all depends on how bad if Fitzpatrick plays really bad against the Washington Redskins.
Yeah, if he's like John Beck and has 20 checkdowns, then seriously, you could bring in Mallett
and feel good about it. Yeah. You know what I mean? And they're not really happy with the rookie Savage. It's an opportunity. I wouldn't say two because I think obviously they'll give Fitzpatrick an opportunity to seize the day. But week three, if he plays bad, week one and week two, week three, I could see Ryan Mallett playing.
I think that he's on a very thin leash with Bill O'Brien. I think Bill O'Brien realizes that new NFL coaches, you don't get that long, especially when you have a mature roster like this one.
Mm-hmm.
You need to come in, have a plan, and you need to at least make this team viable. Let's be realistic. Even though they're coming off a 2-14 season, this team has a lot of talent on that roster. And that 2-14 season was the reason for that was because of the pick sixes that Matt Schaub threw.
Yeah, exactly. So they're still a decent team if you think about it.
Very decent team from a talent standpoint.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just that last year the quarterback play and along with a multitude of other things. So I don't think Bill O'Brien will give him that long to feel that comfortable. That's why, you know, knowing that they brought in Ryan Mallett, that only puts his feet closer to the flame.
This guy who's close to, I'll be honest with you, an opportunity. He did coach for a little bit. So I could definitely see Ryan Mallett getting an opportunity sooner than later.
All right, I'm going to go with the over under week six. What are you taking?
I'm going to week four.
Okay.
Week four, I can see
Ryan Mallett.
Taking
the under.
I don't think you need nothing. A bye wouldn't really suit him because he knows the offense.
Okay.
So anyway, let's go down. Let's go to Michael Sanders.
What were you going to say?
I ain't going to say.
I'm interested to say.
I was going to say, let's go down, but it's Michael Sanders now. on the outline. Sound right.
Go down, Michael.
Michael sounds on the outline.
It doesn't sound right. Better. Didn't come out
especially
right.
Especially talking about Michael Sam, ain't sound right.
Well, Michael Sam, I'll take over from here.
Go ahead, please.
We all know that Michael Sam was cut by the St. Louis Rams this past weekend.
Cowboys,
yes, he has a physical schedule for tomorrow, Wednesday, in Dallas with the Dallas Cowboys too. And if all things go correctly, he will be added to the Dallas Cowboys practice squad.
Michael Sam will be a Cowboy. You know the jokes that are just out there?
Yeah. Once again, you know, Jerry Jones always said that the Cowboys are the number one ratings mover when it comes to primetime TV during the fall. He stated that. And this will only give them more light. Because we all know, I think that Michael Sam wasn't picked up because we all saw the tape that he did on tape.
Mm.
Now, a lot of people say that, you know, he only had one move and it was against third and fourth stringers, but he showed that he could play in this league.
So you think because he's gay, he's not on the roster?
No, I don't think I think the attention that ESPN gave him.
They did too much.
Especially with the shower thing.
Oh,
my God.
They did him a big disservice.
They did him a huge disservice because you got to think about it. What team outside of Jerry Jones wants to put up with that much media scrutiny and attention for a practice squad player.
Totally agree. They did him dirty.
Yeah, they didn't do him any you know, and we all know this, it's a story and needs to be reported and ESPN.
But not like this though. A shower though? Like
his shower habits, that was ridiculous. It was funny. But it was ridiculous.
It was hilarious. When I saw the actual headline, I was like, this is a story?
I was like, you can't be serious.
You can't be serious. Now, this is like a frontline story, though. Like yes. Him in his shower.
This is one of the leads on the 6 o'clock ESPN Sports Center.
They're doing too much, man. Doing way too much.
The center for Buffalo, Eric Woods, he stated ESPN is the reason why he got cut. Because, you know, all of the scrutiny and all of the attention that he was getting just for being an openly gay football player did him a disservice when it came to making the roster and or even being added to the practice squad of St. Louis. And I totally agree. I don't think it's not fair, but yeah. It's the path he chose.
Yeah, he had like three sacks in preseason. He should be on some practice squad, to be honest with you. He shouldn't. I understand maybe the St. Louis Rams, because the Rams are stacked at the end. Maybe that was the reason why they couldn't
keep up. Yeah, defensive line, absolutely.
Yeah, but he should make some team. And also being the SEC player of the defensive player of the year, he should be on the roster, to be honest with you.
I mean, to be honest, I think Dallas is the perfect place for him.
But seriously, though, the jokes are like crazy.
The jokes are going to be in abundance. Yes, I mean, we know this.
They're already having Brokeback pictures, dog. Like,
really?
Out there on social media.
Well, yeah. I mean, the jokes
not
are...
To be, I'm not trying to be me. I'm not being a homophobe or nothing. The pictures are out there.
Yeah, we all know that the jokes are going to be in abundance when it comes to him, Jerry Jones, and the Dallas Cowboys. But just realistic, this is probably the best spot for him just because for one reason. This defense was horrible last year.
Yeah, that's
historically
true.
Horrible.
So he can get a chance to play.
He will get a chance. He has an opportunity to make that 53-man roster and schedule and dress for the 46-man roster come one Sunday if he proves himself during this time on the practice squad for Dallas. Now, what he needs to do is he needs to get another move than that hand slap that he has, because a lot of GMs and a lot of people, football insiders, are saying that he only had that one move. You know, he's a high motor guy that only had that one move. So hopefully down in Dallas he can concentrate. We know he's not going to get away from the media in Dallas.
Yeah, he's not going to.
Because he has an owner who loves the spotlight.
Seems like a kid that loves the spotlight himself.
He does seem like. He seems like he's really enjoying it and taking it all in. But, oh, that was bad, taking it in.
See, am I the only one?
But no.
Especially when talking about Michael Sam. Doesn't sound right.
Yeah. But, yeah, I'm not being homophobic. But,
you're not. No one's being.
But
all in jest.
Yeah, this is the best opportunity for him, if you ask me, playing in Dallas, who had a historically horrible defense last year. So he'll have the opportunity to help a team. And, you know, to me, it's kind of silly that no GM thought that a pass rusher, a guy who's a pass rusher, couldn't help your team. And we all know the premium that teams put on the pass rusher.
Yeah, that's what got me, was like, pass rushers are valued.
Second to quarterbacks.
Yeah, you want that. Like, and obviously, you know, there's – I'm with you. I think it's more the attention than rather his sexual orientation. I think it's the attention that he's going to garner.
Yeah.
And they don't want that distraction. Yeah. People don't want that distraction.
Jerry Jones wants it and loves it.
Anyway.
And embraces it.
Anyway, if you're listening to the show, feel free to call the numbers. 202-495-0904. That's 202-495-0904. Before we get into – I was going to talk about David Carr, but also there was breaking news right after I did this outline, Wes Welker. You heard about Wes Welker?
No, I didn't.
Got suspended 4 games for drugs. He got suspended 4 games.
For what?
For drugs,
dude. Oh, he's trying to keep the concussions away?
No, this is before, I guess. You know, it's got to be way before the concussions. Which drug was it? I'm sorry. Wes Welker. Here you go, yeah. What did Wes do? What did Wes? There you go.
Well, why you get that?
I got it right now. I got it. Oh, amphetamines.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
This is the last year of his contract. He has a concussion, so maybe we don't know. Maybe he wasn't going to play these first 4 games coming off of that concussion.
Maybe
he had.
Yeah, and you know he was a Patriot though, so it doesn't surprise me. He's a cheater.
Oh man,
he was a Patriot.
That's a low blow.
It's a Patriot, man. It's the Patriot way. If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying.
Okay. I mean, I'm not going to jump out there and say that.
I will.
Okay. But This definitely affects. It affects my fantasy team in one of my leagues because I have Peyton Manning.
I haven't done a fantasy league yet. Supposed really? To? Yeah, I haven't done one yet.
Okay.
I'm supposed to set this one, set one up for the group, but I forgot.
Okay.
I've been real busy.
But they brought in EJ Emmanuel. So he'll be Emmanuel Sanders.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah.
So he can. He's a guy who can play in the slot or play on the outside, and then you drafted a guy, Cody Latimer, and you have other options that I'm sure Peyton Manning will have them all fall in line. So,
Peyton Manning.
So that that offense will still keep moving.
He'll make a slot. He'll make Caldwell the new Wes Welker. He'll be fine. That really doesn't matter. Peyton Manning will make somebody.
He will adjust.
He will adjust, definitely.
But back to what you were stating about David Carr. David Carr, he breaks. What would have been a potential streak of not having a rookie quarterback start since 2007. Mm-hmm. But David Carr, he's getting a week one nod over Matt Schaub to start for the Raiders. Mm-hmm. Do you think this is a good move for David Carr?
Oh, battery went down. Take that real quick. You said for David Carr? I'm going to talk about David Carr.
Okay.
I got to fix and make sure the connection's back.
All right.
We're good, though. We're recording.
We're recording. Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. I actually think that you spent a high second-round pick on David Carr. Now, we do know the story with his brother. Excuse me. We do know the story with Derek Carr's brother, David Carr, who was sacked 72 times during his rookie season. And Houston for the Texans was the number one pick, who kind of flamed out of the league. But I think Derek Carr is a much better pro quarterback than his brother was at this point in his career. I think it's the right move for Oakland, because Oakland has a mix of veterans and young players, and it's a start to move them in that direction. Why prolong the inevitable? We know that you brought in Derek Carr for a reason. You know that Matt Schaub, a veteran quarterback, a guy that you brought in to kind of be a stabilizer until he's ready. But if he's ready and, you know, their play has been pretty even during this preseason, I say go for it.
No, I'm so for it. Like, to me, Derek Carr was I was impressed with Derek Carr in the preseason. He looked good. He fit the part of a quarterback. And Matt Schaub wasn't doing it. Obviously, he wasn't impressing. And he's a guy who has that quarterback pedigree. You know, your brother played in the NFL. That helps you out as a quarterback. So you're not. This doesn't impress you. You've learned enough. Obviously, he's had help with people like Trent. Trent Dilfer, who went to Fresno. Sorry, thank you for saving me. Trent Dilfer. So, in my opinion, this kid's ready. To me, he was the, and I think I allude to this too in the outline, I think he's the best. He's the best quarterback in this draft.
I wouldn't go that far.
Yeah, he is.
I still think Teddy B.
Nah, he's better than Teddy B.
Teddy B.
You like Teddy B. It's okay.
No, it's not. No, just looking at what he did on film, playing in the pro style offense, the way, the precision that he used on his passes, a guy who knew when to take something off the ball just to drop it in right over a defender's hand to get it to his receiver, placing the ball where only his receiver can catch the ball. I still think Teddy Bridgewater, is going to be the best quarterback out of all the quarterbacks in this draft class.
Yeah.
But that's yet to be determined and seen, you know. He didn't beat out Matt Castle, which I think Matt Castle played phenomenal, played out of his mind during the preseason.
Yeah. Matt Castle had probably the best three games of his life in the preseason.
Yeah,
was hitting wide receivers. He usually is a check down star. So
yeah, it just goes to show you some guys, if you put competition or put a hurdle in their way, they shrink up. Some guys rise to the moment, and Matt Castle was a guy who said, "Nah, I'm going to take. This is my team. I'm going to take this quarterback position." Unlike Brian Hoyer.
He was like, yeah, ho. It's me.
Okay.
It's me. It's all me. I mean, again, I'm going back to Derek Carr. Derek Carr, he just really impressed me. He really did. He really impressed me. He's a guy who has the arm. If you look at his pocket presence, it's there. He owns the pocket. The moment doesn't seem too big for the kid. So I like it. I think he'll be a guy he'll be very successful. Very successful with the Oakland Raiders.
I'm not saying he won't be successful. I just still think that Teddy B will be the best quarterback out of this draft class.
I think Teddy B will be good, but at this point in time, he's just not. I think the next couple of seasons, I just think as a passer, put it this way, as a passer and what he can do down the field, I think Derek Carr has that potential. To me, Teddy Bridgewater within this team, within right now with Minnesota, he's more of a West Coast-ish quarterback than me. Not to say he won't be a guy who will be stretching the field, you know. But right now, when I look at Derek Carr, I see Derek Carr not scared to go down the field, if that makes any sense. Like, he's not scared to throw the 15-yard route. You know what I mean? And I think all the quarterbacks that I've seen, other than Broyles, aren't intimidated to go deep in terms of a deeper in route. You know what I mean? Not like the bomb, but a deeper in route.
Okay. All right. Well, we start our season picks.
For
week one. We have four games on deck. Hopefully you're ready. You know who you're going to pick.
I do. As soon as I get my paperwork together.
Okay.
All right, I'm good.
All right, I'm going to start game one. Green Bay versus Seattle. In Seattle, I take Seattle.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Seattle. I don't like this team, but I'm going to go with Seattle. We want to elaborate why?
I just think that this Seattle team has, one, the 12th man. Two, the mentality. This team, Pete Carroll, has created a atmosphere of competition where no guy who walks in that building takes anything for granted. So I think a couple of those two things, along with Green Bay's shaky offensive line, and I still think, and Seattle's ability to snuff the run, I'm taking Seattle for those reasons.
That's a good – they're recording? Hold on. Testing? Hello? Record?
Are we recording? Or?
Yeah, we're recording.
Okay.
Stop recording. No. Just making sure that the audio's in there. Sorry, my bad. It seems like it's paused out. It's paused out. Anyway, yeah. Hold on. Yeah, it's stuck. That's why. I was wondering what's going on.
As a super producer, Waliola fixes this. I'll keep going.
Yeah, keep going.
You pick Seattle. Next game, New Orleans versus Atlanta.
All right, so I'm going to go with New Orleans. I'm going to Atlanta. I think Atlanta bounces back. Last season was a season that they all want. The folks from Atlanta want to forget. Obviously, my man Ray wants to forget that. Last season. So I'm going to go with Atlanta. I think Atlanta has a lot to offer, a lot to prove. You're going to have Matt Ryan, who has a lot to prove, and you're going to have Julio Jones and Roddy White back and healthy. So I like it's the first game of the season, so New Orleans has no excuse.
Okay. This game is in Atlanta. You probably haven't been keeping up with the Hard Knocks. Brian Cox has been the star of Hard Knocks. To me, Mike Smith is kind of create a false bravado of toughness for this team. I ultimately don't think that transfers over to this game. I'm taking New Orleans. I think that this offense is going to be just as explosive as previous years. Mark Ingram has looked phenomenal as a running back. He looks like a guy who's capable of at least getting them 1,000 yards and 10 touchdowns this year. That defense with Rex Ryan, I finally think that Rex Ryan has the opportunity to have to coach a defense that won't have to play from behind so much. New Orleans will be up in games, and he'll be able to let those guys pin their ear back and rush the passer. And also, I think this team finally has the defensive backs that a Ryan defense needs, because I think everyone knows that there are two important elements to a Ryan defense, that is pass rushers and cornerbacks. And I think they finally have this with the defensive backs. So that's why I'm picking New Orleans.
I will be going. You want New Orleans? Dang, New Orleans. I'm going to go. Well, I told you why I want Atlanta. San Fran versus Dallas. In Big D. And we already know what's going on with San Fran. They're smacking chicks left and right.
Yeah. Alden Smith will be out. Navarro Bowman's out. Ray McDonald.
He'll probably play on Sunday, though.
He might play on Sunday. This is a tough one. Well, no, not really a tough one. I still think that they have they're grounded in phenomenal leadership with Jim Harbaugh. He's a tremendous leader of men. Colin Kaepernick and them boys, and the truth and Frank Gore. I'm going with San Fran.
Yeah, I'm going with San Fran. San Fran's defense. I mean, Dallas defense still is horrible, regardless of what's going on in San Fran.
And also, Romo's back.
Romo's back. He was back or he's back. What do you mean?
No, his back is still. He's still having those back troubles.
Yeah, and he's still in Dallas.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna go with the Cowboys. I'm going. Oh, no, excuse me. I'm going with the Niners, And I see Kaepernick running wild. And plus, they're missing Sean Lee. Sean Lee's out for the year. So, yeah, I'm definitely going with the Niners, period. Plus the Cowboys. I'm not going for the Cowboys.
And then we have America's game at 8:30 at, 8 p.m. Sunday night. Indianapolis versus Denver. Who you got?
It's Faye Hill. She don't do it anymore. It's the other chick that does it. The Sunday night game.
I don't know. I don't know.
She looks good, the blonde chick. I'm gonna go with Denver. I think Denver, it's a good fit. I mean, it's a good situation. Peyton Manning, home game, first game of the season. I just can't see him losing to Andrew Luck in the first game.
This is the game I struggle with the most from the perspective of Denver still has a lot of new pieces on that defense. We know that they have Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware, two of the best pass rushers and probably in the last five years of this game. But ultimately, like you, I'm going to go with Denver. I don't think that even though I do think Trent Richardson bounces back this year, I just don't see him doing it against this defense first week of the season. So I'm going with Denver. I think with the quarterback play, we're going to have phenomenal quarterback play out of these two, but I think ultimately in the end, Peyton has just enough tricks in his bag to pull it out.
Yeah, so that's pretty much it for the picks. Let's go into fantasy football. So just give people I'm not doing a sleeper or whatever. I'm just going to do it like real direct.
Okay.
All right, so which players, you name two or three, you can do one, I don't care. Which players do you feel are going to have a big fantasy week in week one?
Week one, I'm going to go with Jamaal Charles, and I am going to go with Jamaal Charles and Drew Brees.
Jamaal Charles and Drew Brees. I'm going to go with, it's going to be because he's playing against Oakland, and I've heard good reports out of New York. I'm gonna go with Geno Smith, week one.
Wow, you're really stepping out there.
Exactly, that's real. You know, I mean, you got it. Sometimes you got to step out the box, man. You can't just stay in. You got to step out the box.
You got to get out of the box.
You got to. I'm gonna go with Geno Smith, and I'm gonna go with I'm gonna do stuff that, you know, that nobody's done. Everybody has like the same thing over and over. I'm gonna go with Chris Johnson having a big game too as well in that same game.
Oh, so you're going with two Jets?
Two Jets. Chris Johnson, Geno Smith. Chris Johnson's going to be the rebirth of what he did with the Titans.
Well, I definitely know this. He'll be in a position to, because we know that Rex Ryan loves to run the ball.
Exactly. So,
but one thing that scares me is he's playing in like a three-back system with him, Chris Ivory, and Bilal Powell.
Yeah, the best running back will prevail though.
Yeah, ultimately, yeah.
The best running back will prevail. Whoever that is, the best running back will prevail.
Ultimately, yeah, I do agree on that note. All right, well, we're going to take it to commercial break. When we come back, we'll be talking NBA specifically. As you know, you listened to our show last time. This segment, NBA basketball, is dedicated to our departed friend, Ron, and this was the mega NBA.
It's the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
My life is full of statistics. Thing is, I could have dropped out of school and become one myself, but I didn't, because I had people that believed in me. Here's another statistic. 7,000 students drop out every school day. That's one every 26 seconds. It's time that students know that we believe in them.
Inspire a student and share your message of support at boostup.org.
Mike Wilmer.
Bands make her dance.
I'm just popping bangs. Bands to make a dance. Bands to make a dance. These chicks clapping and they ain't using hands. Bands to make a dance. Bands to make a dance. All these chicks popping. I'm just popping bangs. Bands to make a dance. Bands to make a dance. These chicks clapping and they ain't using hands.
Short hair like be alone. Lose one, she don't need a loan. Start twerking when she hear a song. Strip up all her income. We get tripping and then some. So nasty when she rolling. She puts that air off in my hands. I remote control it. She give me down when the roof gone. At the KOD, she leave with me. She got friends. Bring three. I got drunk. I got drank. Bend it over. Juicy J gon' poke it like wet paint. You say no to ratchet, ratchet. Juicy J can't. Racks everywhere. They showing racks. I'm throwing racks. In the VIP. Rubber on. I'm stretching that.
Stretching that.
Hey. Hey. Hey, it's that stripper music, man. That good old stripper music. I wish they played this thing in the strip club at KOD.
How long were you in KOD when you went there?
How long?
Yeah.
I ain't shit at that. Like maybe the 4 o'clock in the morning, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, wow. So you made a night of it.
Always. It's out of, that's not on South Beach. I'm gonna have a good time. We talking about strip clubs, man. South Beach chicks. Strippers love me, too. They like talking to me. I make them laugh. I make them feel real good about themselves.
Yeah, you make them feel good about themselves. You don't make them feel as if an object.
And it's an art. Because I really believe in strippers, though. I believe in their act.
Yeah, they're selling you. They're selling you a fantasy.
Yeah, well, they ain't selling me a fantasy.
They're selling a lot. They're trying to give the perception that they're selling you a fantasy.
Yeah, I like the fact that they work the pole well, and then they work their buttocks. Mm-hmm. Well, on my genital area.
Oh, okay. Oh, wow.
You know what I mean? But God bless strippers, man.
Yeah, we're back from commercial break. Remember, this is Mega, the Mega NBA. So just to give you all a reminder, if you're able, Wally has established a fund for Mega's family. Please go to www.gofundme.com/CBT730. Please help support a fallen comrade, friend, Ron. Support. He has two little girls that his untimely death left to be supported. So if you can, please lend a hand to him and his family. All right, NBA talk.
Yeah. So before we left, we've been gone for a couple weeks, but by that time, Kevin Love is officially a Cleveland Cavalier, joining LeBron James and Kyrie Irving. His former owner,
Glenn Taylor
for the Minnesota Timberwolves, said that Kevin Love will probably be the third wheel. I'm paraphrasing. Will be the third wheel, and his lack of defense will be exposed.
Well,
do you agree with him? Do you agree? Do you think
part of it is sour grapes because Kevin Love didn't want to be in Minnesota. So I think you always have to put things in context depending on the source. Two, he will most likely be the third option on that team. LeBron James, will be number one. Kyrie Irving will be number two because he's the point guard. And Kevin Love will be the third option. And we all know Kevin Love isn't used to being the third option. So as we stated when they made the trade, that'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Three, I think that defensively he will be vulnerable because he played in Minnesota with the big Russian who was a rim protector. He was a guy who played in the paint, Peklovich, who played in the paint and protected the rim. Kevin Love doesn't have that type of guy in Cleveland. He has Anderson Varejao, who's a guy who loves to rebound, loves to get to mix it up down in the post. But it'll be interesting to see the defensive rotation, the defensive scheme that they play with Kevin Love. So I think most of it is sour grapes, but also some of it is there's some truth to it.
Sour grapes. Definitely, but I'm not going to let that blind me from what I actually think. He was 110% truthful. Kevin Love will be the third wheel. His defense will be exposed. This is something I stated before. He said it because he was mad, but he said the truth. There was some truth into his statement, and I agree with everything he had to say in terms of Kevin Love's what he's going to do in Cleveland. And if you know LeBron wanted to be GM, and he's the GM of the Cleveland Cavaliers. So he put this together. Now he has to see something. He's going to have to see it to a point where, all right, when Kevin Love is out there and you're playing against the powerhouses of the NBA. I'm not talking about the Eastern Conference. I'm talking about the powerhouses of the NBA when because you want to win a championship, so you're going to have to play a Tim Duncan and Spurs probably, or Kevin Durant with Ibaka. How will Kevin Love produce against those individuals? Or maybe even a Clippers team with Blake Griffin. Blake Griffin, who's improving every season. Now he's improving. He's getting it. So now he's to a point where he's going to be a dominant power forward. So in my opinion, Kevin Love, when he goes against those individuals, and even who's to say Portland doesn't turn it on LaMarcus Aldridge?
Absolutely. I was actually about to name him.
Exactly. Because to me, that's the best power forward in the game. So if he goes against that, I mean, players like that, how will he look? How will he produce? So LeBron wanted him. He got him. Is Kevin Love the key for them to win a championship? I don't know. I can't say it. I don't think so. He's the key to win a championship. But to me, did they need Kevin Love to get through the East? Not really. So we'll see what Kevin Love has to bring to the team.
As we stated last show, I want to see how he's going to fare being the third wheel, because that's what he will be. What's his attitude going to be? Will he put in? We all know that he loves to rebound, so that I don't think that he's going to give you the effort on the boards. But defensively, will he commit to the system that David Blatt wants to play? Will David Blatt be able to cover up Kevin Love's deficiencies on the defensive side of the ball? So I think with him, this elevates this team to with the top two in the East. Personally, I want to see how Derrick Rose comes back, because a healthy Derrick Rose makes Chicago, to me, a team that's on par or just above Cleveland, all things considered. So,
see, it's not, to me, it's not just Derrick Rose. I'm agreeing with you right now. It's not just Derrick Rose. I think the signing of Pau Gasol is what makes this team a problem. And I spoke about Kevin Love. You think Kevin Love can check a Pau Gasol on the block? No. That's a problem. Kevin, having Pau Gasol, who's a skilled postman, with Derrick Rose, and then you get more scoring now, you know, with McDermott off the bench. You got Joakim Noah, who's gritty, and he'll probably take on the onus of checking a Kevin Love on the other side. So you got, I mean, that Chicago team is fearless. And I'm sorry, I didn't even mention Taj Gibson. This team is fearless. And you know they don't like playing against LeBron, so it makes it even worse.
Yeah, so I can't wait to see that those guys get into a 7-game series and during the playoffs, and also to see those guys play in meaningful games after the All-Star break, and also prior to the All-Star break. I don't know the schedule for Chicago and Cleveland, but you know those games are going to definitely be prime time, and it'll be games that the world can see just because. Of the excitement with Derrick Rose returning, also the addition of Pau Gasol and the other additions that Chicago made versus Cleveland with LeBron James, Kevin Love, and Kyrie Irving. So a lot of interesting basketball that we're going to get into once October. You think about it, man. It's already September, so October is right around the corner.
Right around the corner. We're about to be back online again. Right now we've been taping, so it doesn't
matter. Yeah, it doesn't matter. The show's almost over, so I stated that I think this team would be one of the top two teams in the East. Most likely Chicago's number one. Where do you think this place is, Cleveland?
I think I'm gonna go Cleveland. To me, is even though I respect LeBron and his paralysis and what LeBron brings to the table, I'm just gonna have to say LeBron. Cleveland's gonna have to be ranked for me. Cleveland is two, Chicago's one, and those are two teams to me that mean anything in the Eastern Conference. I know people want to talk about the Wizards. We can mention the Wizards being local, but they're not. They may be the third best team.
Yeah, I mean there's a upper echelon in the East clearly with Cleveland and Chicago. Then you have the Wizards, and you have Toronto, and possibly depending on how things fare out, and just because of how they played after the break last year, the Nets. So you have, you know, the upper echelon, then you have the second tier, then you have your third tier when it comes to playoff teams in the East.
So what do you have? So the Nets, I forgot about the Nets.
Huh?
I forgot about the Nets.
Yeah, I think, Kevin Garnett returning. They lost Paul Pierce, But you got to understand that Plumlee showed up and showed that he could be relied on. Also, Darren Williams would be healthy. Joe Johnson. Lopez would be back this year. He'll be healthy. So you have the mixture of young and young players and veterans. So I want to see how that plays out. Plus, they had Lionel Hollins, a guy who was out of the NBA last year, but who took the Memphis Grizzlies to the Western Conference Finals the year before last. So,
all right. So let's go to USA Basketball. Coach K, right now, Coach K has decided to start. Kyrie Irving over Derrick Rose. Does Kurt's coach, and you know, and they've been dominating USA team. They lost. I mean, they almost lost to.
Well, no, Turkey was a very close game at halftime. Then they came. Kenneth Faried blew the top off of. Yeah, he's been a monster for the USA basketball team. It's just gone to show that Coach K. A lot of people allude to Coach K. has a system, and you know he has certain type of players who work well in the system, but you know he's changed the makeup of this team this year with the six big men opposed to previous years when it came to USA basketball, where they were really dependent on the wings, where now they're dependent on guys on the block with Anthony Davis, Kenneth Faried, Drummond, DeMarcus Cousins, Plumlee, and who's the other guy? It's slipping my mind. But yeah, this team is far more focused on the block this year, getting the ball down on the block and letting the bigs work.
I like you talking about Anthony Davis?
Nah, I mentioned Anthony Davis. Okay. I was just mentioning all the bigs they had this year.
I like, let's see, I'm trying to make sure it's still not working. All right. I like some bigs I like. Well, my whole problem with the USA team is that, to me, Kyrie Irving starting, and I have no idea why he's starting when you have Steph Curry, and you have Derrick Rose the MVP, and Steph Curry, a guy who's had more success in the NBA than him, and it's a guy who can shoot and set somebody up. So you can't say that you can't say that Steph Curry doesn't fit the European or the Olympic style play, because he's a guy who can shoot the ball and drop. So basically, truth be told, he's an Olympic player. Like international. I'm sorry, there you go with this term. International player. You know, when it comes to international basketball. So that's the thing that annoys me. But Coach K wants to go Kyrie Irving.
Well, you know, Coach K has his guys, as do most coaches, and you can't blame them for that per se. You know, he's in there with the practices. He knows how things are running. He probably has a specific way he wants his system ran. And Kyrie Irving, for his perspective, is probably the best player for that now, just because Derrick Rose is coming off of the two knee surgeries. And also, you don't want to run Derrick Rose too far into the ground, because you'll probably need him more in the later rounds. And you'll definitely need his athleticism to pressure the ball on defense. There's something to be said. I do agree with you. Steph Curry, to me, is the ideal international player, because he's a guy who plays very well in pick and roll. He spaces the floor and also creates off the dribble for himself and others exceptionally. So I would agree with you that Steph Curry, probably his credentials are stronger, but you have to think about it. Kyrie Irving also is a great with the ball in his hands, getting to the bucket and creating shots for for other players with the driving kick.
All right, let's go something local, because I'm hearing about this. You know, Under Armour made a pitch for Kevin Durant. Nike swooped in, matched the deal. Now Kevin Durant and Nike are connected by the hip.
Well, they are partners now. Partners for 10 years for the amount of money that you're paying Kevin Durant. Nike, he's essentially a partner for 10 years and over $25 million a year on average. I think it's a smart move by Nike, because it just realistically, the guy who's the most consumer friendly, the guy who's selling everything now is Kevin Durant. He's on Sprint. He's selling Sprint phones. Also, you know, when he had that, when he first started the backpack coming to the press conference with the backpacks, they were selling those things. They couldn't even keep those backpacks.
Yeah.
The KD backpacks. Kevin Durant has extended his brand to be one of the, probably the second most noticeable NBA player after LeBron James. Probably the, he's probably the most marketable at this point, because you still have some people that, up until LeBron going back to Cleveland, hated his guts for leaving Cleveland and going to Miami, which I never understood. partly due to the decision. But I think it's a huge deal for Kevin Durant. A lot of people were stating that, you know, if he had a sign with Under Armour, the Under Armour owner, Kevin Plank, was going to push for him to be back in the D.C. area, which I don't think would have happened. I do think a very reliable source. Well, I'm not going to even say that. I'm not going to go on record and say that. But
what?
Nah, we'll talk about it afterwards. but there's a very high likelihood that Kevin Durant does come back to D.C. There are people that are very close to him that want him back in D.C.
Okay, got you. We talking about neighborhood homies.
Nah, closer than that.
Dang, what I'm talking about?
Very close source.
I do know of a source. This source said he wanted him to go to L.A.
Nah.
Very reliable source. Nah. But I'm not going to say who. I heard this 3 years ago. But
okay. But there's a chance that he comes back to D.C. And Wizards fans shouldn't just give up. Just say, oh, he's a Nike. He's going to stay at Oklahoma City. Nah. There's a very high likelihood that he's definitely going to entertain the thought of coming to D.C. depending on how things play out in OKC.
I don't know if he's coming to D.C. But I see him come to D.C. because of all the warning signs. This does nothing for me. All the Under Armour and stuff, that did nothing for me.
No, that didn't do. A lot of people were trying to speculate that if he signs with Under Armour, he'll be back in D.C. They'll push for him to come play for the Wizards, which, no, that won't happen. Won't happen at all. All
right, well, looks like we're about to wrap this show up, sir.
It's a wrap.
It's a wrap. Before you wrap it up.
Chicka, chicka, chicka. Wrap.
What the fudge? Chicka, chicka. Sounds like some super bad type stuff.
Is that chicka, like chicka. Rap.
What's that, like McLovin?
That's my beatbox.
Oh, my God. That's like some McLovin stuff.
This dude here. Rap.
Oh, my God. I think I just heard it all. You can listen to our show by visiting our official Urban Sports Scene website, which is www.wallyo.podbean.com. We're also on iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. And if you have any questions or comments, just email us at change.da.game6@gmail.com. Again, thank you all for listening.
Some of you heard us live. We were disconnected midway through the show. But
yeah, it's okay.
This show will still be posted, and we appreciate you all who, even if you just take a couple seconds out to just check out the show, listen to our voice. Once again, as we stated before, you guys are the reason we do this. Yeah. We're fans just like you, and we wanted to give the fans a voice.
Thank you. You all have a great one. You take care. Big Ron, let these people know about the show.